Stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, as you heard. Interesting show today. Something I don't know much about, but something I got plenty of questions about. So we bring in the experts, Harold Foley, Sean Parker, community activists here from Charlottesville. Community activists. I often wondered what that was about. So we bring in community activists. Current events. We're going to talk about Tulsa. We're going to talk about Charlotte. We're going to talk about people kneeling during the national anthem here on the Sunday morning wake-up call with Mr. Foley and Mr. Parker on the last Sunday of September, getting to be fall, finally. So let's just jump right to it. And I will tell you, Mr. Parker, we're going to have to twist that microphone a little bit so that you're not talking into the back end of it. We want both of you to be sort of talking into the front end of it as best we can. And there we go. So let's start with Tulsa, because that happened first, right? That has been 9 or 10 days ago now. So we have an event that happens. A black man, Terrence Crutcher, 40 years old, killed a week ago Friday, September 16th. Disabled vehicle on the side of the road. I think somebody calls and says, I tried to help him, but he acted a little strange. When I walked up to his car, he said, the car, come closer, and then ran away from me and said the car was going to blow up. And that person called the police and said somebody needs to come help him, but he might be on drugs.
Wow.
And so when the police show up to help, the gentleman ends up being killed.
Yeah. Tased and shot.
Two black men, both parents, correct?
Yes.
Both of you are both of you are parents. Is this a fear of your own every day that you go out? If your car breaks down on the side of the road, is this a fear of your own every day? Sean Parker, you said your child is not of age to drive.
Right.
Ms. Foley?
Well, I have two young men, one age 15 and one 17. And my 17-year-old is able to drive. But even before, you know, he was able to drive, I had a conversation with him about what you should do when you get approached by the police. And, you know, it's so disappointing when you tell them to be respectful, you know, don't get angry. And then, you know, you still see that people sometimes even had their hands up, still get shot.
And so here we are in Tulsa, and I guess the video, we'll never have, you know, this is not a TV show where we have 20 cameras from 360 degrees. So we don't know everything that happened from every angle. But we have a little bit, we have some good footage of this. And it appears as though, despite what the gentleman, however his behavior was, it appears as though there was no need for him to be shot.
Exactly.
So I'd like to know the reactions of two gentlemen who are certainly within a statistical age range of this gentleman, who had a broken down vehicle, who might have acted strangely, But they found that there afterwards, they found no gun in his car, no weapon on his body, no weapon in his car.
Exactly. Well,
what does this current event say to you?
Well, it tells me that it's not really much changed since, you know, back in the 60s and stuff like that. We always had to be subservient to the law enforcement. And I don't think that's fair, you know. And it seems like we have targets on our backs, you know what I'm saying, in some cities. Now, here in Charlottesville, we don't really have, you know, situations like that too often where, you know, officers, law enforcement take somebody's life. But just last night, I got pulled over by law enforcement last night when I was leaving my job. And it was a black officer. And I have to say the interactions was pleasant. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't no hostilities. It wasn't anything like that. Now, if that had been another officer, a European officer, a white officer, then I think the situation would have been a little more tense. I'm not going to say I would have been in danger or imminent danger, but I wouldn't have felt as comfortable, you know. And that's a problem with our society today abroad, you know, all across the nation. We shouldn't have to have targets on our backs just because we wear fitted hats or, you know what I'm saying, just because you come up and you might talk a little different to somebody else. That doesn't mean that you're a threat to anyone. And you definitely shouldn't have to lose your life.
You said that if the officer who pulled you was not black.
No, he was black.
No. But what I'm saying is if the officer had not been black, mm-hmm. that the situation would have been a little more tense.
Exactly.
Would the tension have come from you?
Yes.
Do you think that you would have been the one concerned about his behavior?
Yes, I think so, because I don't see why he would feel threatened by me or tense by me, because I don't have no weapons, no nothing. Of course, he doesn't know this, but I don't have any weapons or anything like that. But my tension would come from, I work the night shift. It's 4:00 in the morning. There's nobody outside. I'm the only vehicle at the stoplight. I'm a black man, you know what I'm saying? And I got my ID badge on him, and I showed him I was coming from my job. But it's just that, you know, if it would have been another European white officer or something like that, I just think stuff could have, my sense would have been a lot more heightened, because in light of everything that's going on today, I wouldn't have no choice but to have been, you know what I'm saying, on more of alert.
11:08 Sunday morning wake up call, talking about current events with two African American community activists, Harold Foley, Sean Parker. I'm Rick Moore. I am white. My background is from a strong white small community. I do not have a strong mix of African American background. A lot of these questions are going to be because I don't know. I'm feel like I'm waiting for me to ask the question improperly because I don't know. I have a relative who is a police officer. So bear with me as I tread the waters through this hour with two gentlemen who have been kind enough to come on this program today and talk about this. So let's go back to Tulsa for a few minutes. A shooting that took place, I guess, about 9 or 10 days ago now. So the vehicle's disabled. It's reported that the gentleman is possibly on drugs. At this point, we still don't know whether that's true or not, because any testing that was done has not come back. We know what's happened in Charlotte, and we'll get to a few more details on that. One difference being that in Charlotte, a black officer shoots a black victim. In Tulsa, a white female officer shoots a black victim. Your immediate thoughts on that?
Well, as far as Charlotte, if you had watched the tape, it was a lot of shooting going on. So I don't know exactly if it was a black officer, because the shots that rang off, about 6 gunshots that went off. So maybe initially The black officer shot, but I think also some other officers shot too, because we don't know, to this day, we don't know what bullet from what officer hit him. We know the bullet from the guy in Tulsa was shot by the white woman, because she was the only one who shot. And so, you know, but I don't think the bullets being shot or who shot the bullets really matter, because what you have is the police officers have this wall of blue that, you know what I'm saying, they're going to protect each other, you know. And so, you know, I understand, you know, the fact that people want to figure out why this black officer shot this black guy. But it's, when it comes to police and when it comes to citizens, police is going to be with the police, regardless of the color, regardless of the nationality. They're going to be officers of the law. You know, people are so shocked that it was a black man who killed them. But we got black folks who are in politicians, who are judges, who are against their own race. So that doesn't matter.
What do you think happens that, I mean, because there's so much today, and we talked about it or certainly touched on it just in the few minutes of preparation before coming in here, that there's the things that you have to talk to your kids about, the difference, you know, that you have to tell them because it's a black family. What happens when you become a black officer, or when you become an officer or a judge or a politician that washes away the black part?
Well, I don't even think it's that, you know, because you can say what happens when a black person becomes a millionaire, you know? You know, things get corrupt in their mind, you know? I want to be able to serve my community, but I have to know that I am a law officer. I'm a judge first. You know, I can't pick and choose, because if I pick and choose to be for black individuals or the Black Lives Matter, I'm going to lose my job. So is this about, you know, how they got to change their whole outlook on things, you know? And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that all black officers are bad, all Asian officers are bad, all Caucasian officers are bad. I'm just saying that they are protected by the blue wall. That's the whole thing I'm talking about. You know, what all has happened with the war on drugs, the prison industrial complex, you know what I'm saying? Even with Jim Crow, when we, you know, first was free as slaves and then Reconstruction, then they got mad about, you know, what we were doing at that point of time. You know, it's a history of things, you know, even back, you know, in slavery time, it was some African Americans who owned slaves. It was black people who owned slaves in the United States. So it's not really because we black, we, you know, we got to throw up the fist with black power, whatever you at. You know what I'm saying? You just got to be conscious about what you're doing.
11:14 here on the Wake Up Call, talking about some current events that are happening in the past week with Sean Parker and Harold Foley, community activists from the Charlottesville area. One of the things that came up with the Tulsa shooting, one of the first events that we're talking about, was that the officer said that she was in fear of my life. We hear that a lot. It doesn't matter, doesn't seem to matter the gender, the race, but that seems to regularly be an expression of why the gun was used.
Well, first of all, I don't know how the officers, all these officers, that's their first line of defense. Oh, I was scared for my life. I was scared for my life. That's the lamest excuse I ever heard in a book. I mean, how are you going to be scared? A, you're a police officer. You have a gun. You have a taser. You have handcuffs. You have a pistol. You have blackjacks. You have backup, because as soon as they stop you, that's the first thing they do is call for backup. Now, how do you have all of these weapons and stuff at your disposal to control the situation, but you're the one that's scared of an unarmed man, of an unarmed person. It's outrageous. It's just, these egregious acts against our people have to stop. It has to stop. Period. And they just cannot keep saying, well, my life was in danger. I felt threatened. If I did something like that, if you stood up in front of me right now and I pull out a weapon and just hurt you, I'm going to prison.
I would fear for my life.
Exactly. I'm going to prison. But if you got a gun, you got a badge, you're a police officer, and you stop me from walking down the street, why are you so scared of me? What is the threat? Don't know. So I think that's just a big cop-out that they use to protect each other. And it's just a license, basically, to kill unarmed black men. And not just black men, because white guys get killed. Hispanics get killed. All other ethnic groups get killed. But it just seems to be concentrated in black communities. And it's been going on for years. For years. I'm originally from Newark, New Jersey. I moved down here in 1988. I heard some of my friends in Newark when I was a child getting murdered. You're talking 30 years ago. So this has been going on for quite some time, and something needs to be done about it.
I'm going to read you this quote. I'm getting so blind now, I have to take my glasses off and put the paper close to my face. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the Washington Post. What should horrify Americans is not didn't save the one I wanted. So,
well, sometimes too, the media just want to portray the things they want to portray, but not recently, it was a white male who robbed a bank. And he shot at the police, and the police actually shot him with beanbags. And, that was just, I look at that and say, what's the difference? You know, when a black male doesn't have a gun and a white male does have a gun, and you choose to use less lethal force than killing them. I think that's how some of black parents, some of black males are feeling like, when it's a different skin color, is a different way of going about controlling the situation.
Have you ever been, either of you, because I have not, either of you been face-to-face against somebody that you thought might have a gun, but you weren't sure?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Were you frightened?
I mean, you do have fear. I mean, you do be frightened, but, to say I was frightened and I wanted to use force on him because I had an opportunity to use force on him, no. Fear is fear, because if I put a gun in your face right now, you're going to be fearful of me, But to see it, to think that you have a gun, not seeing it, I'm not going to have fear of you.
Exactly.
I'm not going to have fear. I'm going to be cautious, but I'm not going to say, oh, God, I feel this person. I need to run. I need to protect myself. Exactly. That's the difference.
Do you think that was there a time period that things changed? Sean Parker, I believe that you mentioned it goes back to the 60s, but have officers, has society been shooting African-Americans dead since 1960? Did we use beanbags and shoot in the leg, some of the things that have been talked about in other sense? Did we do that in the 70s, in the 80s, and then at some point we went back to more lethal force? Did something happen?
They always been killing blacks all across the country for ever since I've been on this earth. And I'm 44 years old. And it's like I said, it's sad. And it's something has to be done about it. There's no way you can tell me that You as you being a law officer, you being an officer of the law, your first obligation is to the people. You understand what I'm saying? That you protect, not to your
protect and to serve.
Exactly. So in essence, you work for me. You work for me. Any civil servant, because I'm a taxpayer. You understand what I'm saying? So why should you feel so threatened by me? And I'm by myself, but you can go up to, let's just use a university, for example, because the students up there, they get kind of wild and belligerent and drink. And I seen them set sofas on fire outside and the police come and they just handle them with a whole nother level of care. It's like they cater to them. But I also seen police down on 10th and Page that will pull up on young black guys that's standing there on the corner rapping or doing whatever they're doing, not bothering anyone, and treat them like they're Osama bin Laden or like they're ISIS or something like that, you know. And it's ridiculous, man. It's ridiculous. And it's not just white officers and stuff like that. Black officers and Hispanic officers that turn a blind eye to that type of treatment towards black people, you're just as bad as those, the other ones. You're rotten. You're no good. So it's the system I think we have to change. I think it's the system we have to change, because you can put anybody in a system, but when you have such a corrupt system, such as the system we live out here, then anybody you put in that system, they could, you know, form biases against certain people or other certain elements of the job description.
Sunday morning wake up call, WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We are talking about current events. Started talking about the shooting in Tulsa. Our guests today, Harold Foley and Sean Parker, two local community activists. Sean Parker, you mentioned changing the system. Mm-hmm. You and Harold Foley, I'm curious as to, you know, changing the system. What are we talking about here? Are you talking about different people making up the system? Are you talking about different ways of training the system? Are you talking about, you know, give me some, what tell me, okay. What are you talking about?
All right. When I say change the system that we operate under, our government, our police forces, our schools, everything. It's just that everybody acts like it's not such a thing as white privilege. And it is so obvious. And you know, it's just so obvious. You know, I mean, anywhere you go, you know what I'm saying? You have people look at you funny. They look at you different. Not everyone. A lot of people look at you different. And these are people that have pretty much your life in their hands. Like if I go to apply for a loan or something like that, and I come in there the way I'm looking with sweatpants, T-shirt and stuff on, they don't look at me like I'm serious. You know what I'm saying? They look at me like I'm a thug, but I'm dressing comfortable. You know what I'm saying? You can't judge a book by its cover. But we really need to change our policies. We need to start with, like, our United States Constitution. That has to be revamped all the way around the board, this is my personal perspective on it. But we have to change the way the police interact with us. We have to change where we have to get all these corrupt politicians out. We have to get all these corrupt judges, lawyers, these public defenders that just plead you out and send you to prison for crimes that you really shouldn't, you know what I'm saying, go to jail for, and you let sex offenders walk the streets. You know what I'm saying? And it's just disgusting, and it's deplorable that the system that we live under. And we have to change it. We have to change it.
Harold Foley, I saw you nod your head when I said training.
Yeah, I think training is a must needed. And, you know, on both sides, because I think, too, the citizens need to understand how to interact with police, you know. But, you know, like I said before, I try to tell my kids and other kids that come to my house that hang out with my kids how to be able to not get a police officer upset, you know, how to be respectful with them. But also, on the other side, police officers, when they are in high, tense mood of really trying to get somebody, they really don't see, they see what they needed to do. So, say for instance, I guess when far as the Tulsa thing, if she had better training, you know, about getting that guy on the ground and locking him up, you know, we wouldn't be here right now, right? We wouldn't be here talking about, you know, the person who shot, you know, the police officer who shot this man with his hands up, going to his car and putting his hands on his truck. You know, if there was better training about how to subdue people who are getting out of hand, I'm saying we would be here. We wouldn't even be talking about that. So I think the training has got to be with every officer. And I'm pretty sure there are good officers. Don't get me wrong. And we're not here to bash officers. We're not here to bash anybody. What we're trying to let people understand is that when it comes to black issues, people get nervous about it, and we don't. And we are tired of people getting nervous about it. You know, we want a conversation about how we can make things better for both situations. You know, that's what we are.
11:26 Sunday morning wake up call. Current events. Harold Foley, Sean Parker. Hang tight. Back in action here, Sunday morning wake-up call. It is a nice Sunday in terms of temperature, maybe not in terms of sunshine, but it's a great day here inside the studio at 94.7 because we're talking about important stuff. Sit down, take some notes, open up your mind. Harold Foley, Sean Parker with us, community activist, says we're talking about current events. Does this qualify as Black Lives Matter? Do I need to put a hashtag out there?
No.
Harold, you said that just before we took that break that it needs to be, we need to talk about, there are topics that need to count or whatever word you used, important topics that matter for blacks that are important to whites too, that can be purposeful to both. Give me one.
Well, you know, I think this communication, you know, communicating with folks about your history and what they have, you know. For instance, when we came in, you know, you automatically say, this is who I am, you know. We got to find some commonality amongst each other, you know. You know, that's one of the major things is finding out who that person is and, you know, why. I remember a big incident happened in West Haven. I used to live in West Haven. And the officers arrested my father for something that was so simple. But what happened was people, you know, galvanized around him. And it was a lot of people coming out the house. And so the end result was the officers came and talked to the community. And to find out who they are. And what we found out that one officer lived in the town of 500 people and was no African Americans in that town. And so I think from the top, when officers get into one of being officers, and if these officers are not familiar with African American cultures, they need to get a culture, you know, revise about how to deal with the community or how to deal with the Latino community or how to deal with the poor white community. I mean, because what we have is officers who don't really, you know, patrol Park Street, you know. Exactly. They patrol West Haven, Prospect, Friendship Court, the trailer courts down there on Carlton Avenue, Cherry Avenue. So they in all the low-income areas. You know, not only do we have a race problem, but we have a economic problem too. So that's a big deal.
Let's break before we get into Charlotte. I want to talk for a bit about the national anthem because that has also been a current events issue. Colin Kaepernick from the San Francisco 49ers in the National Football League I didn't write down the date, but I'll say a month ago, deciding that he wasn't going to stand while the national anthem played. And for the first time that he did that, he sat. He received a lot of feedback, some positive from those who said, hey, if you choose not to stand because you have issues with that the flag doesn't represent everything for you at the moment, that's okay. It's also one of your rights to do so. And then others who said, if you're not happy, then leave the country. What do you want to get some feedback from the two of you?
Well, me, myself, I take my hat off to Colin Kaepernick. And I think athletes of his stature, people of his stature, should have been taking this stance a long time ago. Because our national anthem, well, their national anthem, because I don't subscribe to it, because it doesn't apply to me. My everyday life has been totally different than this so-called free institution that we live in. You know what I'm saying? It's not, I never subscribed to it. You know what I'm saying? I used to when I was small, but once I got a little older and a few bumps and bruises in the road, you know, of life, it just teaches you, you know, it just looks so familiar. The stuff that they say in the national anthem that's supposed to be is when you walk through your everyday life. I have never experienced, you know, a whole lot of that, you know, freedoms and liberties and all of that stuff in my day, in my travels.
Well, my whole thing is that he did a protest that folks didn't believe in, and then we turned around and got two African Americans shot within a month after he started doing it. 3 weeks after that, you know, and for those who are still like saying that he should leave the United States, they should understand the history of the United States because they got their blindings on, you know, and we need. You know, I respect him for doing that, you know, and, you know, it goes back to this. When you are at your house, we got millions of people watching the game and the national anthem come on. I don't know how many people standing up for that. I'm sitting there eating me some nachos.
That made me smile because for the certainly millions of people who, because there are hundreds of millions of people in the United States, and there's a hefty percentage who are bad-mouthing him for his stance. I can't say that it's 50-50, but there's a hefty percentage who have given him a hard time about it. I would say that not all of them are standing when the national anthem is played for whatever event that they can hear it, Super Bowl or not, whatever event where you can hear it actually played.
Hey, before we go on, I want Sean to explain something else that happened in Tulsa some years ago.
Oh, in Oklahoma when they had Black Wall Street. The only place in the United States where there was actually bombs dropped on a place in the states was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it was a prominent Black community, you know, with Black business owners, Black banks, Black everything, and they dropped bombs on them people and blew them people up and destroyed their homes, their businesses, their livelihoods. And the Gap Band made a song about that back in the 80s. You dropped a bomb on me. A lot of people never really saw the relevance in it, or, you know, saw the
didn't understand what the lyrics
exactly,
applied to.
Exactly, exactly. And a lot of us don't know that story till this day. You know what I'm saying? But it's not just Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's places like Rosewood, everywhere, all across the country, especially in the South, just especially in the Jim Crow South, where these egregious acts of violence against our people have been just going on and on. And there's nothing done about it, ever.
And I believe the Tulsa incident that Sean is speaking on was a officer who killed a Black man.
Exactly.
And that's how it started.
Well, but let's stick with the shootings. We'll come back to Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, but that's the history. And I think that's what we get into. People don't want to hear the history. Let's stick to what we're talking about. But we need to talk about the history of this evilness that's happening.
No, no, no. That's what I'm saying. We'll return to Colin Kaepernick later.
Okay. Sorry.
Which is, why haven't we, haven't been made aware of any protests in Tulsa. Have they not been as big? Have the protests in Charlotte overwhelmed the news from Tulsa?
They had protests in Tulsa, but it was all nonviolent. So it wasn't nothing to focus on. It wasn't no negative light.
So it wasn't as interesting media wise.
Exactly, as North Carolina. Because, of course, in North Carolina, they show what? Chaos, confusion, mayhem, you know, and all of those types of things. But I seen on the news where you were just saying they had very peaceful protests in front of, I think it was a courthouse or a police station or something. But the protest was very peaceful, nonviolent, no incidents, you know, no type of incidents that happened.
I'm curious, what between the two of you, your thoughts on what benefits come from any type of protest and the different type of protests? Because if there is no protest, what happens? And if we have a protest, the difference between a violent and a nonviolent protest?
Actually, I am tired of protesting because, you know, we've been protesting since Trayvon Martin died, Mike Brown died, you know, Freddie Gray. So why the hell we keep marching down the streets talking about we need change? Well, the only thing we need is people to actually go to these politicians, vote them out, vote the city councilmen out, vote whatever they need to vote out. That's the way you protest, you know. I understand that people believe that protesting can be the key to everything. But, you know, in my vision, I know the way to get people out or the way to apply pressure is go to the people of power and apply the pressure there.
Do you actually, let me do this, 1138 94.7 WPVC. This is a Sunday morning wake-up call. Guests today, Harold Foley, Sean Parker, community activists in the Charlottesville area, as we're talking about current events and what's going on and how it applies to African-American black issues. If there, you know, you say that we don't need protests anymore. And I don't know that Sean agrees with you.
No, I'm not saying it because, you know.
You say you're tired of protesting.
I am tired of protesting. That's what I'm saying. You know, some people believe in protesting. You know, I had a young lady at my house yesterday. She's a UVA student who is dealing with my daughter. And she said she had to do a questionnaire. And one of the questionnaires what do you think UVA students should do? And I said, I think the black students should do more into the community. And she got mad with me. She didn't get up mad. She pushed back and was like, we did do something. Didn't you see we laid down and protest? And I looked at her and said, oh, that was fine. Yeah. I mean, that's in solidarity, but I'm talking about this community here.
That's right. Sean Parker, do you agree? Are you in agreement are you tired of protests?
I'm definitely tired of protesting and marches and all that. We need a call to action. We really need a call to action here.
For many people, call to action these days, and I'm not saying that this is what you're saying. So quickly, agree, disagree, give me the definition. For many people, many whites, when a fairly young black man says call to action means violent protest.
No, I don't mean like violent protest. I mean like we have to, like Harold said, we have to hold our institutions accountable. We have to hold our Congress people accountable. We have to hold our police chiefs accountable. We have to, you know what I'm saying, hold our communities accountable. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, when I say a call to action, I mean we got to stand up and just don't keep just having this conversation in our living rooms. You understand what I'm saying? Let's not just keep having these conversations at the in front of the water cooler at work. You know what I'm saying? Let's go somewhere where we can make change. And you know what I'm saying? We can affect change and demand that some changes be made.
But where is that?
I guess the city council meetings.
Well, it depends. Like, you know, that's one thing you got to do. I think the good thing about change is when you find out what changes need to be made, you know, you have to research what's the problem, you know what I'm saying? And I will hope, too, that, you know, it's not only a black issue, it's also white allies that we need on our board with us, you know what I mean? But it's figuring out what is wrong, because something that's wrong in Charlottesville is definitely different than Charlotte. So you got to figure it out. Because it's not just a universal thing, is where is the problem lies. And once you figure out where the problem lies, you band together, you go to where the power is, and you leverage that power. Exactly. That's organizing 101.
11:41 here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Incredible conversation. Harold Foley, Sean Parker. Hang tight. All right, back in action. With Harold Foley and Sean Parker. We've been talking about current events. We've been talking about, but the most recent part of the conversation was about getting people in action. And so I want to go back to the two of you and find out. The comment was made about how Charlottesville is different from Charlotte. So as local community activists, and how do you get people to do something that's not just, you know, wandering down the mall with a sign? How do you get people to vote? Because you don't have to be active. You can read the headline. You can be what I call a first paragrapher, the person who reads the first paragraph of this news article, to know that in an election, it's anywhere from 20% to maybe 40% of people who are eligible to vote to go out and vote. You're not going to get change with that, Sean Parker. So what do you do? President Obama got people out there by actually going out there to pick them up and drive them to the polls. So how do you make change happen? How do you get communication going without literally going to the door, picking them, you know, taking them by the wrist, walking them to the car, and getting them to do what you want them to do?
Well, to me, it goes back to we have to all have like minds. We all have to have like minds. We all have to put our personal views to the side, and we all have to come up with one solid agenda, common agenda. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I was saying earlier when I said we need to hold our communities accountable, because we are just as much at fault for letting this get to this point. You know what I'm saying? Because we don't come out in the communities and we don't band together. And you know, that's a whole nother subject why I believe we don't do those type of things together. But we have to stop that, and we have to start with ourselves first as a people. Then once we get our voices together and our act together, we can take our act in front of somebody else that can help us, or that can point us in a direction to somebody that can help us, or they can, you know what I'm saying, let us help ourselves. You know what I'm saying? But we have to start with holding our communities accountable.
Is Charlottesville, you say Charlottesville's different from Charlotte. Is Charlottesville average, above average? How is Charlottesville doing in its treatment of blacks and its efforts of keeping things even? I think before we came in or somewhere earlier in the hour, you mentioned that there's preferential treatment for whites. I mean, let's face it, that is in most areas, that is just life. How does Charlottesville do?
I think overall, you know what I'm saying, Charlottesville police and Albemarle County police, you know, I think when it comes to like violence, like beating people and stuff like that. They don't do that type of stuff as much as they do in other places. I think our police force is really good in that aspect of things. Now, there have been occasions where I've seen them get a little rough with some people that they're apprehending. But in, like, other places across the countries, you know what I'm saying, the police is ready for violence as soon as they, you know, come in contact with you. But here in Charlottesville, I have to say that I've never really seen the police, like, just brutalize people, like, talking about it. But I do see them racial profile. I do see them patrolling the neighborhoods where the 50-year-old guy that's standing outside not hurting nobody, drinking a beer, which that is against the law. They will run down on him like he is down with ISIS. You know what I'm saying? So we have to change some of these policies, we have to change the way a lot of these police think and a lot of interactions we have with the police. Now, the violent aspect, yeah, I think it's cool, but the other aspect of things, like when they just can just look at you and assume that you're doing something wrong, they can assume that, you know, they can look at you and assume that you're going to do something wrong, that has to stop.
How about outside of the police? How about just, you know, other parts of the city, you know, city government? Are you treated, Harold, you said you grew up in West Haven.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There are other parts of city government that help black communities, such as West Haven, correct?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, one of the funny things about Charlottesville that is really crazy, Charlottesville has more nonprofits than small businesses. And that, with that said, is I can actually, what it has done is done crippled the community that they serve, because these nonprofits enable people to say, I need help, and they can just go there, you know. And I am a community organizer, and that kind of, it defeats the purpose, you know what I'm saying, of me really getting people active in understanding what they need to do to effectively change a system. With that said, it is really an eye-opener when, you know, I go talk to someone that's like, you know, hey, you know, how much you paying for housing, blah, 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 blah. Do you want to get active? You know, folks like, they kind of like, I don't know, you know, because people don't like change regardless, you know. In Charlottesville, we not living in a utopia, but we living in a place where, you know, the police do profile people a lot. You know, they go to these neighborhoods, they come in strong in these black neighborhoods and, you know, talk to the young people or the people who they talk to in a very rough way. But like you said before, like Sean said before, it's not as bad as, you know, when, say, for instance, you in D.C. and the police pull up on you, the first thing they're going to do is pull the gun out on you. And it's like, let me see your hands, you know. So it's just Charlottesville is very, you know, very complacent about, and I'm talking about the community, about doing anything that's surrounding action or coming to the city government. You know, unfortunately, something did happen maybe a month ago when the folks at Crescent Halls felt like housing was doing them wrong about not being able to have AC, you know, and they went down there and they went strong. But are they going to go into another issue after the AC is fixed? That's what we have to figure out. How can we move ourselves into another issue when we finish our issue? You get what I'm saying?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I think when you have so many nonprofits versus so many small businesses, small businesses force you to get up and go out and do it. And nonprofits allow you to sit home and wait for them to come find you. And so there's a different form of reaction. And, you know, everyone in need of assistance or, You know, we want everyone in Charlottesville to have everything that they need. Most of us do. And so whatever neighborhood you live in, we want you to have good housing. We want you to have health insurance. We want you to have good food and all those things. And it would be nice if you had the skills and the energy to get up and the ability and the fair opportunities to get that yourself. And sometimes in some places and some people, the fairness is not there. Unfortunately, with so many nonprofits, as you mentioned, Mr. Foley, some people are just comfortable to sit on the sofa and allow the nonprofits to come to them.
Yeah, and that's not only black, that's white, that's whoever is in a low economic status. And, you know, we talk about economics. You know, Charlottesville, and we just go back to how, you know, economics can be a factor too in race. But in Charlottesville, the living here in Charlottesville is like Northern Virginia. The wages here is like Lynchburg. And that's one thing that we need to fix too, is how are we going to fix the wages here? And the biggest corporation we have here do not want to pay people a living wage. And that's UVA.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. We need to, people talk about we need to fight for this, fight for that. We need to go up UVA. The people in the city can cut their water off and said, until you pay us a living wage, do you pay our people a living wage, we're not going to cut your water back on. That's what we talking about. That's what kind of action that the city can do. But they so afraid of UVA that, you know that UVA going to take this from us, but UVA haven't gave them a penny.
And when are you taking over Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority?
As soon as I get the keys.
Is that part of Sean's idea for voting you into that spot? Again, a few minutes left with our guests today, Harold Foley, Sean Parker, 11:53 here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. I want to talk for a few minutes about, we brushed through it throughout the hour, about what you tell your kids, how you raise your kids, and even how that might have changed from what your parents told you growing up in this society and what it's like, how it's changed. So, Sean, let's start with you. What did your family tell you that you needed to do to be safe? And now you have a 9-year-old daughter?
Yes, my big shout out to my baby Trinity Sam Parker. Happy birthday, baby daddy. Love you so much.
Thanks for letting your dad come here for a little while.
But yeah, when I was coming up, my mother, my parents always told me to be compliant when I come into law enforcement, or, you know, be respectful and be mindful, because the first thing you need to do is make it home safe.
Did you do that?
Yes.
Well, yeah, but I've also heard some of his comments today, so I wasn't so sure whether he actually...
Oh, yeah, I'm talking about when I was smaller.
When
I was smaller, your mother used to tell you things. Because, like I said, I grew up in Newark, New Jersey. And Newark, New Jersey and Charlottesville is like night and day. It's totally different. So, yeah, but I tell my daughter today, you know what I'm saying? First of all, it's important to know your self-worth. You don't have to be subservient to no one. You understand what I'm saying? Speaking up for yourself doesn't mean that you're an aggressive. You know what I'm saying? Standing up for yourself, or, you know what I'm saying, correcting, speaking on something that you think is wrong. You know what I'm saying? It's not being defiant or nothing like that. So if she gets older and she comes into contact with police, I tell her, look here, first of all, you be confident in yourself and you be strong enough to stand up and tell them, you understand what I'm saying, what you're going to allow them to do. You know what I mean? And that's the way we got to get down to. We have to take the power away from these badges. You know what I'm saying? We don't put too much power and prestige into the badge, and we're forgetting about the people. We are the people. You know what I'm saying? So it's what we need.
So, me, myself, my parents, I was kind of sheltered a lot, so I didn't get off the porch until I was 14 years old. And when I got off the porch, you know, it was open season. I was really rebellious, you know. But
Can I interrupt for a second?
Yeah.
When you say you didn't get off the porch till you were 14?
That means I didn't get to get off the porch. My parents didn't allow me to go outside.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But was that because they were keeping you safe because they were concerned about what might happen to you physically?
Yeah,
because
West Haven was off the were really not a safe place when I was 14 years old. So my dad was really trying to protect me from what was out there. But now I have 5 kids, 2 grandkids, and I got 2 boys. But my older daughters understand the situation about what to do in front of a police officer. And my older boys, I try to explain to them that when an officer pull you over, how to be respectful. But, you know, we have a conversation. I try to talk to them as much as I can about race and, you know, being able to understand racism, because they really haven't seen racism like Sean and I seen it. I mean, I remember one time we walking down Main Street and a carload of white individuals pulled over and called us, start calling names, call us the N-word. Can't say it on radio, but N-word.
Thank you.
Then they chased us down. And it was one, and they, unfortunately, they got a big surprise because we found a trash can full of bottles, and they ran from us. But that was really shocking for us because we were on Main Street of Charlottesville. So my kids really haven't seen racism. And it's really hard for me to explain it to
them. And you know that they will.
They will.
Which is the unfortunate part, is you can't say, oh, this happened back then.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not the old, we walked up the hill both ways in the snow, because you know that it's coming.
That's why I always stress to my daughter the importance of knowing your worth, knowing the proud stock that you come from, so you don't feel inferior when it comes to you dealing with other people. You never feel beneath a situation. You always feel like you got an even playing field. Know yourself, believe in yourself. You understand what I'm saying? And that's where we got to start at. We got to start with ourselves first.
60 seconds left. Do you have plans to take your family, your kids, to the new African American History Museum?
Yeah, when the tickets come available.
Yeah, no question. I wanted to take my daughter to see Birth of a Nation, but I don't think I can do that.
No.
But definitely, anybody who's heard our voice out here, definitely make that trip to see the new museum in Washington, D.C. I think it's a eye-opener, and it's going to be really emotional for everybody of what color, race, or whatever they might be, age, or whatever.
All right. Sean Parker, Harold Foley, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
It's enlightening to me to get into these conversations because I don't know squat. It's not my background, and it's helpful to me to communicate, as we talked about earlier. Thank you so much.
All right.
Who's here next week? Dan Gold is here next week. Computers for Kids, something everybody else needs to, an important organization. Adios.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.